The next case for argument is Bartel against NBC. Ms. Alleghi.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Karen Hume Alleghi with Gordon and Simmons, and I'm here on behalf of Marsha Bartel, plaintiff appellant. The question before this court is, did Ms. Bartel state a cause of action for breach of contract in her complaint? She did. And it was error for the district court when it held that the exception recognized in New York law did not apply to the relationship between Ms. Bartel and NBC simply because she was a journalist. In fact, the employment relationship in this case carried with it obligations beyond the written word of the contract between the parties. And New York law recognizes an exception to an employer's unfettered right to terminate, be it at will or through a contract. And in fact, New York implies a good faith obligation into the employment relationship in some circumstances. And when determining whether those circumstances apply, New York applies a factual analysis to the relationship, to the employment relationship, in order to determine whether any obligation exists beyond the written word of the contract. And New York case law has established essentially a three-part test to apply to the relationship to determine whether it's appropriate to imply obligations between the parties. And that three-part test is as follows. The employer and the employee must be engaged in a common professional enterprise. The employee had to have been required to act in a way that subverted the core purpose of that employment. And the rules at issue have to be general rules of conduct and ethical standards that govern both the employee and the employer in carrying out the sole aim of their joint enterprise, which is the practice of that profession.
Now, has the Court of Appeals of New York recognized this in any area other than the duty of an attorney to report misconduct that it was discussing in Weider against Scala?
Well, there are only a few cases that since Weider that have discussed this, and actually I think
they've all rejected it, haven't they, outside the attorney-client?
That is true, Your Honor. Of published opinions that we have, it has yet to be applied beyond Mr. Weider, essentially.
And beyond the legal profession, because, you know, for example, in the Horn case, there are many things that are even stronger than what you have. The physician-patient confidentiality norm is one which physicians are obliged by professional ethics to follow. They can lose their medical license. There are external constraints that are very strong on that, and yet that norm was not seen to be enough to create some implied restriction on the ability to terminate someone.
Actually, the Horn case is very instructive because it's important to look at what the court did in that case. They applied the Weider holding to it, and they looked through the relationship between Horn, who was a physician, and her employer, which was the New York Times, a newspaper, and they analyzed that relationship the way that the Weider court did. So as an initial point, they didn't just say, well, she's not an attorney and the employer's not a law firm, so we don't even have to go there. They went beyond that, and they said, no, it's not that narrow. We have to look at this relationship. And at the end, they said, well, the relationship of Horn and her employer, to the majority anyway, was closer to prior plaintiffs, such as accountants that worked for manufacturing companies, and they didn't feel it was similar to the relationship of an attorney and his or her law firm.
I mean, but accountants are actually even closer to your client than the physician was, since particularly in these post-Sarbanes-Oxley days, accountants have profoundly important responsibilities to their employers, if you will, whether they happen to be third parties or employees. And it comes very close to the ethical and fraud avoiding and other kinds of obligations your client was concerned with.
Well, if you look at the relationship that the prior cases had and this case here, the initial question is, what was the employee doing for the employer? What was the purpose of the relationship? In this case, you've got a news journalist working for a news network. They were engaged in the same professional enterprise of producing news for the public, much as the way that when an attorney works for a law firm, yes, there's an employer-employee relationship, but that attorney has a relationship or has obligations and loyalties to the client, not just to the employer. So in this situation of a journalist and his or her employer of the news network, that journalist has obligations to not just her employer, but to the public.
Well,
and NBC recognized that.
Not from anything like the disciplinary rules adopted by the New York Court of Appeals, not even from anything like medical licensing. As you know, there have been legislative battles about the degree to which journalists will acquire some specific kind of protection under the law. But at the moment, you are relying on the internal manual that NBC had, which, you know, has all sorts of good things in it, but that was really between your client and NBC. And I don't see where this external duty comes from.
Well, if you look at those news guidelines and policies that NBC went to great lengths to essentially codify for itself, those weren't just made up by NBC. Those are based on established, long-standing journalistic ethics. And NBC went to the trouble to essentially codify it and give it to its producers and say, you're obligated to follow this, not just for loyalty to me as your employer, but because our job, we have a loyalty to the public to produce.
But what you're arguing is that all forms of professional self-regulation, which can be a very positive thing for society, whether it's journalists or whether it's anybody else, somehow give rise to that same implied restriction on the ability to terminate an employee as was found in Weider. And it strikes me the New York Court of Appeals very clearly has not gone that far.
Well,
I mean, we're just supposed to follow what the New York Court of Appeals does, right? And so we can't make up new law.
Well, but, Your Honor, we're not asking for any court to do anything that New York law would not support. And I think when the Horn case, again, is very instructive. The dissent in that case thought that the plaintiff there had stated a cause of action. So there, the dissent at least thought it would have been appropriate to send it back and that the plaintiff there had come in the confines of Weider. And if the district court here were to have found the same way, that in no way would have conflicted with New York law. It would have complied with it. And what New York has said is you apply this three-part test, and it didn't say that, well, this will only apply to an attorney and a law firm. It hasn't said that. We haven't had a case yet where it's applied it to anybody else. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. The court wouldn't have gone through that analysis if it wasn't relevant to whether the exception applied or not. And in this case, the district court simply said, Bartel's not a lawyer. It doesn't apply. It's a narrow exception. And that was error. They didn't apply the test as outlined by the New York court. And had they done that, Ms. Bartel would have satisfied her burden of pleading at this stage in the game. And I'll rest at this point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Carberly.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Linda Coberly for NBC Universal. This is a very simple breach of contract case. The party's contract expressly gave NBC the right to terminate the plaintiff at the end of each one-year cycle, and nothing limited that right. Now, the plaintiff has made some allegations about why she was terminated, but even if those allegations are true, it can't support a breach of contract here, and that's why the dismissal was appropriate. Under New York law, an employment relationship can be terminated for any reason, and that's true unless the state legislature or the contracting party say otherwise. Neither one of those things happened here.
Well, you say that, but I think that, and it's interesting that we've skipped over to this part of the case and gone beyond the actual contract language, because naturally NBC couldn't have terminated her because, you know, she was in, you know, of a certain race or reasons that are not appropriate. And in Weider, if she'd been a lawyer and she'd been trying to report misconduct in her law firm and she'd been terminated for that, even though she was an employee at will, she would have had some implied protection. So what we seem to be focusing on is what are the recognized exceptions in New York to that general right that you describe mm-hmm. to terminate at the end of each cycle in this instance?
Well, the New York Court of Appeals has been very clear about what those exceptions are. They're legislative exceptions, and that would apply, I think, to your examples of race and gender. There's a New York whistleblower statute that no one's claimed applies in this case that applies when someone is terminated for reporting unlawful conduct that creates a substantial danger to the public health. And no one claims that that applies here, and I certainly don't concede that it does. But there are legislative limits set by both the federal, the United States Congress and the state legislature that limit the right to terminate. None of that applies here. And there are limits set by the parties. But the New York Court of Appeals has been very clear that it will not recognize a covenant of good faith and fair dealing to imply terms grounded in a conception of public policy into employment contracts. I'm reading from the Horn case. It couldn't be clearer about that. It says that if the limits on a right to terminate can come from the employer's express agreement to limit, can come from a statute, or in the Weider case, it came from a very unique circumstance where the court was looking at rules that it created under delegation by the legislature, external rules that govern everyone in the legal practice, both the law firm and the lawyer, and that limit who can practice. It was a very, very limited situation.
Another way of looking at Weider is that the guild takes care of itself and that there are all sorts of rules that lawyers think apply to them that don't apply to other people. But I agree with you. I mean, they certainly confined it. I would wonder if, for example, there were a Sarbanes-Oxley independent duty under SEC regulations or something like that, whether the court would recognize a similar exception. I don't know. It's not this case.
I think that's an interesting question. I mean, the Weider case and in Horn also, the court was very clear about looking at the characteristics of the legal profession that governed, and it was clearly pointing to there's an external set of rules. The rules carry the force of law created by delegation by the legislature. The rules govern whether you can be disbarred or not, and in that sense really frustrate disbarment would certainly frustrate one's employment as a duly admitted member of the bar, which was the purpose of the employment between the lawyer and the law firm in that case. The New York court has been very clear about limiting that case, and if it wasn't clear enough on its face, the Horn case certainly limits that case.
So what's your answer to Ms. Alagi's question about Horn, which is why does the court, spend all that time talking about this when there's the two-page version of the opinion that you could come up with, which would just say these aren't lawyers, and we don't find the kind of external standard out there, end of case.
Well, perhaps the Court of Appeals didn't want to give the Guild Regulates Itself explanation, but it was asked to answer the question, first of all. In the Horn case, both the trial court and the appellate division had ruled in favor of the plaintiff at the motion to dismiss stage and had held that she did allege enough. Mm-hmm. And then the appellate division certified the question to the Court of Appeals, and there was a dissent. There's no question that there was a dissent. And I think, faced with the posture of that debate coming to the court, there's a dissent. Two courts below have disagreed. The majority felt a need to get into the analysis and to really explain why it didn't want to extend Weider beyond its facts. And it was very clear about that, saying by loosing it from its analytical moorings, the dissent would create a broad presumption a broad new exception to the presumption of at-will employment applicable to hosts of professionals and professional employees, and the court was simply not willing to do that. So absent some direction from the legislature or the New York Court of Appeals, there's really no place for courts to imply terms that contradict the clear terms of the agreement. There are no other questions for me.
I noticed your name is not on the brief. And
yes.
At least in my copy, I don't have Rule 26.1 disclosure statement from you either. Perhaps you could take care of that before you leave today.
It was filed, Your Honor, before we submitted the card reporting who would be arguing today. So there should be one on file.
Okay.
I can provide one to the court if you like it.
I haven't received it, but I'll take care of
it. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Anything further, counsel?
Very briefly, Your Honor. What the New York courts have done is looked to the employment relationship, and they are applying contract principles. That's why, regardless of whether it's at will or contract, it's essentially the same analysis. And one of the first things you look at is, well, what did the parties agree to? Let's look at the language in the contract. You've got the letter agreement, between NBC and Bartel. You've got the standard provisions, and those standard provisions reference the news policies and guidelines. This was all drafted by NBC. NBC went to great lengths to write down all of these obligations, and they didn't say, it is just your responsibility, you have this obligation to us. The policies and guidelines say we all have these responsibilities. Everyone at NBC is required to follow these policies and guidelines. And now NBC is saying, nope, even if somebody here violated it, even if we terminated her because she complained about following these policies, it doesn't matter. We never agreed to any limitation on our right to terminate her. That wasn't the agreement. If you look at the contract in total with all of the parts to it, essentially, and look to the agreement of the parties. NBC agreed to this entire set, this full contract. And so the district court or this court would not be reading any obligations that negate the contract. They'd be reading implied obligations that fulfill the purpose of the contract, was to put forth fair, accurate, and balanced journalism. And those are NBC's words. Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.